Thank you, Lori. Before I begin today, I want to acknowledge my co-authors on the project. The first author on the report is Won Kyung Park. He's a postdoctoral scientist in our lab. Also, Brian Scheffler with USDA at Stoneville, and Phil Bauer, USDA Florence. So, of course, when we think about cotton, one of the primary objectives of breeding programs is cotton lint yield. And I thought I'd start off my talk with this slide just to show you progress has been made in lint yield improvement since 1970. So, of course, we have lint yield on the y-axis and the year on the x-axis. And I summarize this data based on the entire U.S. and Southeast. So the trend is in the right direction. We've seen some other reports on this. This isn't new. If we look at the U.S., of course, the good news is when you do this regression, we're increasing yields due to breeding and management improvements, about 9.5 pounds per year. And for the Southeast, the story is good also, about 9 pounds per year. But as a breeder, I look at this and see something different that's a little bit troubling to me. What we would shoot for in a breeding program is to smooth these lines and decrease the year-to-year variability. And as you can see, the blue line here that's representative of the U.S., there's less variability than there is for the red line here that represents the Southeast U.S. And my opinion is one of the primary factors in why these lines for the red line, why there's so much differentiation across years. When we get the rainfall in the Southeast, we have high yields. When we don't get the rainfall in the Southeast, we have low yields because most of our cotton acreage is under dryland conditions. So a main breeding objective then is to smooth out this line over time. So it's known that modern cotton cultivars tend to produce about 60 pounds of lint and 90 pounds of seed for every inch of water used. And I got this from Phil Bauer, who got it from Ed Barnes at Cotton Incorporated. So if you do some math, one bale of cotton production, you need 8.3 inches of water, two bales, 16.7. For three bale yield, you need 25 inches. Well, for Florence, that's good news because during our growing season, we average about 22 inches of rain. But that's not the whole issue. We do have water availability issues in the Southeast. Number one, we deal with these sandy soils. And the water holding capacity of these soils is about 1 inch per foot of soil. So when we get the rain, our soils can't hold the water. Moreover, we get the 22 inches of rain annually during the growing season on average, but it comes in a variable package. And a study out of University of Georgia some years back said that we have a 50% chance of 20 consecutive days without rain in each season. So when you think about cotton plant development, this is a scaled down slide of cotton plant development with the rate of water use on the y-axis and the growing season, but basically on the x-axis. Our peak water usage comes during the bloom period. So if your water doesn't come during the bloom period, you're in trouble. With a 50% chance of going 20 consecutive days without rainfall, there's a high probability that's going to happen. So one of the big focuses in my research is to look at genetic approaches to improve water use efficiency. And we're using two different approaches primarily. We're looking at identifying genes influencing crop water use. We're also looking at identifying genetic variability for crop water use efficiency, basically looking at germplasm. And then eventually we want to get to the point where we're doing some research to manipulate genes or the genetic variability, or both of them, that we find Today what I'm going to be talking about is one of the projects going on in which we're identifying genes influencing crop water use. So one of our primary targets are the aquaporin genes. And as many of you know, aquaporin proteins act as water channels and facilitate water movement across membranes. This was a major discovery in the sciences. Peter Ager, a scientist, won the 2003 Nobel Prize of Chemistry. He was the first to really demonstrate the function of aquaporins in human cells. Well, since that time, the field's kind of exploded. And the aquaporin proteins basically give us an explanation for the osmotic and hydraulic water movement from cell to cell. Now, subsequent research has shown that these proteins have several conserved domains, which are shown here below. And also, it's been found in subsequent research that these proteins and the genes that code for them are ubiquitous across organisms, plants, bacteria, humans. And this on the right just shows a cartoon of what the actual aquaporin water channel looks like. So you have the two cell membranes here, and the aquaporins, they work in teams and tetramers sometimes to form these pores in which water molecules, which are shown here in the solid dots, go one by one and file through the cell, the pore that's formed between the two cell membranes. Now, since this discovery, there's been a lot of characterization, and basically there are five known subfamilies that have been identified of aquaporin genes. And of course we have abbreviations to deal with, but basically the plasma intrinsic proteins, the tonoplast intrinsic proteins, and so on. Basically, the subcellular localization of the proteins is how they've been classified and some of the different functional characteristics. So a lot of plant scientists have begun to study these in plants, and large gene families have been identified in things like Arabidopsis, maize, wheat, rice, and many other plants. And in terms of regulation of these proteins in the genes, we know that there's transcriptional regulation of these genes that's due to drought, to pH, salinity, ABA, nutrient availability in the soil, and also biotic stresses. Post-transcriptional regulation includes gating of these proteins and, of course, subcellular localization of these proteins. So this is what piqued our interest in exploring these in cotton. So we went to the literature and asked the question, what about aquaporin genes in cotton? Well, as a young scientist, I got a good result to my query. Basically, there's very little known about these cotton aquaporins. So we wanted to design an experiment to first go after these genes and identify them, and then begin to design experiments that really studied the function of these genes in cotton. Going to the literature, there are several different published articles describing some of these genes. A transgenic tobacco plant was made with an overexpression of aquaporin gene and made the plant use water very quickly, which would not be something that we'd like to see done. But also other experiments have shown up and down regulation in response to drought. These also have been implicated in nutrient and CO2 transport. So again, the objectives of the study were to identify this gene family, number one, and then begin to look at expression patterns of these genes based on tissue type. So we used two approaches. The first approach was a data mining approach in which we took the couple of known aquaporin genes in cotton, took those sequences, and also aquaporin genes known in other plants like Arabidopsis. We did databases searches in the cotton EST database, and then use bioinformatics to explore the putative function of these genes. And this approach worked, but unfortunately, it's the EST database in cotton mostly consists of cotton fiber, which is really important in cotton. But one of the tissues that we're interested in is roots. So we also did a wet lab approach in which we took the genetic standard in upland cotton, TM1. We extracted nucleic acids from several different tissues, RNA from root, leaf, stem, and fiber tissue, as well as genomic DNA. We designed PCR primers based on the known sequences of these genes in the conserved protein domains of the proteins. We did PCR and cloned these genes, putative genes, sequenced them, and then used bioinformatics to come up with the putative function of these genes to really confirm that these are aquaporin genes. So we did that, and basically what we've come up with is 71 cotton aquaporin genes have been identified, and their distribution is shown here in the pie graph. And the distribution is heavily skewed towards the TIPs and the PIPs, which is consistent with what has been found in other organisms. We also did some phylogenetic analysis of these cotton aquaporin genes amongst one another and amongst against other plants like Arabidopsis, rice, populus, vitus, just to see how similar the sequences were, and this is based on amino acid sequences. And basically what we found is these genes are highly conserved. There's some differences amongst the five subfamilies, but basically the analysis that we did was very much in line with what had been published in the literature. So the TIPs broke up into two groups, basically. The NIPs broke up such as this. But basically, as I'm going through these slides, the PIPs and the TIPs showed less or more conservation or more similarity amongst their sequences. And then the NIPs, SIPs, and finally XIPs showed a greater amount of variability. I don't intend for you to read all of the busy information on this slide, but we did look at the gene structure of a select number of aquaporin genes as shown here. Introns are shown in the dark line, and open line are the exons or the coding regions. And basically, we had a lot of conservation amongst these genes. And interestingly, the nucleotide variation that we found was not always translated into the amino acid sequence. Now, going along, also looking at, we looked at aquaporin gene expression. This slide shows expression data using semi-quantitative RT-PCR. Basically, I'll just talk about one of these gels here. Going across, we have the size marker. We had young root tissue, mature root tissue, young and mature leaf tissue, stem, fiber, and genomic DNA. And going across here is each aquaporin gene that we looked at. And basically what we were looking for, if we saw a band in a particular lane, the gene was expressed. If we did not see a band, the gene was not expressed. So in a nutshell, we saw some genes that showed differential expression across tissue types, but we also found genes that showed pretty constitutive expression across the tissue types. So in conclusion, at this point we can say the cotton aquaporin gene family is extremely large and is structurally diverse based on the five subfamilies, but within subfamilies, there's a lot of conservation. Cotton aquaporin gene distribution is similar to other plants, and gene structure is highly conserved, although nucleotide variation is detected. Some aquaporin genes are differentially expressed across tissues. So we're at the point now where we can start doing some functional studies of interest. We've identified these genes. And some of the things that we're interested in doing is transcript profiling across water stress treatments, tissue types, nutrient treatments, genes and genotypes. Some other things, if we find interesting genes that we want to follow up on, are there novel alleles of these genes in germplasm that may have some particular effect on the plant phenotype? And some other studies that I'll show here. I want to move forward and show you some data that we just collected. Many of the breeders in the room may know of putative drought-tolerant cultivar out of Australia, Cyocra L23. What we have done the last 2 years is grown this cultivar under wet and dry conditions, and we wanted to look at the expression differences in aquaporin genes under wet and dry culture to see if there are any differences. And basically, we have two gels here again with genes going across here, using leaf tissue and root tissue under wet and dry conditions. And basically you can see that some genes like PIP1-1, basically under wet and dry conditions, whether in the leaf or root, show the same expression, so no differences in expression. But if you look at PIP1-3 in the leaf, there's no expression in under wet or dry conditions, but in the root, we have an upregulation of this gene under dry conditions. So this may be a gene of interest that we need to follow up on. Evidently, the transcription of this gene is turned on in relation to drought conditions in the root. So with that, I'll take any questions. We're just at the beginning of this experiment. Before we do any of the real neat types of research that we want to, we had to go and find these genes. The difficulty for us is we have 71 genes. There are probably some duplication because we have the polyploid nature of cotton, where we have two subgenomes. We have to tease out that, but then we have to get down to a workable number of genes out of the 71 to really focus on and see what happens to the plant phenotype in the field.